Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. Check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. Farmer-owned, Vermont-grown, Sunset Lake CBD. Hey listeners, I want to tell you about Music Masters Collective, a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. These events give you the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like the Fab Four, Steve Earle, Richard Thompson, John Scofield, Nels Klein, the Milk Carton Kids, and many more. This June, join the Wait Band, featuring members of the band and the Levon Helm Band with special guests, including Jimmy Vivino, Bob Margolin, Lost Leaders, Chris O'Leary, Cindy Cashdollar, Stony Creek Band, Rob Fraboni, Larry Packer, and so many more at Camp Cripple Creek. This all-inclusive music vacation in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York promises to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience featuring performances, workshops, jams, comfortable lodging, and superb dining. Visit campcripplecreek.com/undermine to register today. That's campcripplecreek.com/undermine.
Osiris.
We're back with Undermine Season 4, and welcome to Episode 44. I'm Tom Marshall, and I'm the person who says things, and then I talk, and then I say more things about this tour, Fall 97, the tour that stands alone among other fish tours as the cow funkiest ever. We are diving into each show from this tour on its 25th anniversary. Today, we're in ice-cold Rochester, New York, 12-11-97. And we're drawing very close to the end of this amazing tour, and therefore, we're also close to the end of this season of Undermine. Having either of two fine gentlemen co-pilot this season with me has been an unexpected pleasure. So RJ and Benji, thank you. Today, joining me is the Emmy Award-winning construction foreman, RJ B. Hi, RJ.
Hey, Tom. It's been an unexpected pleasure because you thought that it would be horrible.
No, just having a co-pilot, is I didn't know what to expect, but fantastic.
I'm just messing with you. This is great. We are on the third to last show of the tour, the third to last show of the season, the third to last something else because thirds work, but I can't think of one right now. So we're going to Rochester. We have a great guest. This is a show that is widely celebrated. There's a soundboard recording that was released, but it's not an official recording, but really amazing show. There's a lot going on here. We're excited to talk to our guest about it, who was there and who also happens to be a podcast host and writer and all kinds of other things. This is the third to last time I'm going to tell you that if you want to support what we're doing, please consider subscribing to Osiris Premium. Go to osirispod.com/premium for ad-free episodes, bonus content, and more. We just did a bonus episode that we released last week, so you might enjoy that. We're also going to be, I guess when this comes out, the day this comes out, if you're in the Philadelphia area within 2 hours and you are listening to this in the morning of Sunday, December 11th, and you would like something to do in the evening, please come join us at the Ardmore Music Hall. We're going to have an amazing set of music with some great musicians. including Cal Kehoe of Pink Talking Fish. He's organizing this band. We're going to have some special guests, and Tom, Benji, and I are going to be talking on stage about Fall 97. We're going to have contests, Q&A, a lot more. And if you can't make it, you can stream it. Go to volume.com/Osiris. We'll put that in the show notes. Okay, Tom, where do we go next?
I think you mentioned one of our sponsors, or you're about to. You're going to hear about, but I just want to point out to people on YouTube that I'm wearing a Smart Wool Grateful Dead t-shirt right at this moment. So we put our money where our mouth is and actually wear the clothing that we talk about. So anyway, today's guest is Jesse Jarno, a writer, a DJ on WFMU, and the co-host of the official Good Old Grateful Dead cast. Jesse has been on Undermine, Under the Scales. He's a good friend of Osiris, and he's a writer and the host of After Midnight, the Osiris podcast about Big Cypress. And he's also written the books Heads, A Biography of Psychedelic America, Big Day Coming, Yola Tango, and The Rise of Indie Rock, and Wasn't That a Time, The Weavers, The Blacklist, and The Battle for the American Soul. Let me bring Jesse in from the waiting room. There he is.
I is.
Hi, Jesse. How
hey,
are you?
Good. Hey, RJ. Hey, guys.
Hey, Jesse. Good to see you, man.
Nice to see you.
Welcome, Jesse, to season 4 of Undermine. We hope you've been listening as we've traversed one of the most amazing historical fish tours, Fall 97. And you saw this show.
But I did.
I was wondering what brought you up to the northern border of the United States in a very, very cold winter. Had you seen a lot of fish by this point?
I had. So I was a freshman in college in the fall of 97 in Oberlin, south of Cleveland, which meant that I was, 5 or 6 or 7 hours from anywhere, just conveniently located. And I only saw 8 shows this tour, I guess. It was, I was away from home for the first time. I was like, wow, I can go to all the shows I want to go to. I'd been seeing fish since 95, since summer 95, and had, seen a couple of shows each tour since then. And this was the first time I could just do whatever I wanted. So, I don't even remember how. So I went to Hampton a couple weekends before that. Somebody was driving in this baby blue VW Bug. So we hitched a ride to a couple friends and I went to Hampton for the weekend. The weekend immediately before these shows in Rochester were the local shows. They played in Cleveland, which was sort of local, and then in Auburn Hills and then in Dayton. So, me and my gang went to that. And then these shows, sort of vaguely kind of maybe a little close to Ohio. No, not really. But somehow found a ride. Is that an email list or Rec Music Fish? But found a ride with somebody I didn't know. And some friends and I took the bus from, did we take the bus all the way to Cleveland? I don't know. I don't remember where we took the bus to, but he met us at a bus station and met up with this guy from the internet and got in his car and drove to Rochester, and it was great. And, I had friends. I had a good friend in Binghamton who drove up for that show. And so this is my freshman year in college. I didn't go home for fall break, and I think Thanksgiving break was, too short to see my friends. So this was, really the first time I had seen my really close friend since I went away for college, 3 months before that or 2.5 months before that, whatever that was. So met up with them outside the show. I have no memory of how we found each other. We found each other,
Awesome.
That whatever way you find each other outside fish shows in 1997, we found each other.
And before cell phones existed.
Before cell phones existed. And
you were treated to an amazing, amazing show.
It was, I have such fond memories of this specific. I have fond memories of every show I saw in fall 97.
Yep.
But this one, part of it is that glow, that glow from seeing my best buds after not seeing them for months. And, we're all obviously big fish fans and have been keeping up with this tour. And I can't remember if they'd seen anything before that point, but I definitely got to be, Hampton was amazing. You got to get the tapes. All that kind of stuff.
I remember, well, two things. Let me preface this by saying, and I apologize to Rochester or people living nearby, but to me, I've lived in New Jersey forever, and Rochester isn't close to anything as far as I can tell. It seems like it falls in this anomaly where it's basically Canada as far as I'm concerned. But and then Buffalo's up there too, right? They're all up there. Syracuse, I had a friend at Cornell. It was very, very, it seemed very, very far. But it was worth it. And in my rule book, any show that opens with punch you in the eye is going to be great. And even today, that's still true. That's a rule that somehow works. But this disease into maze, to me, is a must listen. I had more fun re-listening to this show than I think any show in this tour for whatever reason. RJ knows I don't listen. I don't re-listen a lot. But this is just an amazing, this, it's a must listen, Disease into Maze. It's, and it's not cow funky, but it has a lot of the magic that makes Fish Fish back in 97. And Down with Disease has this remarkably artistic slow down into a fantastically relaxed jam. And at one point it even stops for like 16 bars. And then the band resumes as if nothing happened. And then a segue into one of the best mazes ever. And I'm sure people there were dumbfounded. Do you recall set one getting off to such an amazing start?
Oh yeah. I mean, the energy definitely, I mean, both of the sets start with this kind of like just, you know, hose of energy for the first, basically, you know, well, I guess both sets are kind of like an hour each. So it's sort of like the, you know, but the first half of each, you know, more than that in the second set, but it's just, you know, this pure, just, you know, pure rock and roll energy. I mean, that punch you in the eye, even to jump back before that, Down with Disease, is the, it's one of those ones where they really extend out the intro, you know, and they're kind of like riding that groove.
Beautiful.
It had been a minute since I put on any Fall 97 Fish. Usually when I'm like in a Fish mood, I kind of, there's always so much new stuff to catch up on that I put on whatever the most, you know, the most recent stuff is. And just hitting play on Fall 97 Fish, you know, it, I mean, it certainly gave me the feels, but just, you know, just hearing, I can't even necessarily put my finger on what is so different about it. You know, sort of the way everybody fits in the groove is just this very 1997 thing. A lot of even just sort of the subtle differences in the textures and tones that all the guys are using, but it's just this distinct way of them falling in to punch you in the eye. And the, it just, the, and then they just float over that groove before they even hit the, you know, the big energetic composed part. And so I went to the opera a couple of weeks ago. This is a very slight tangent. I don't usually go to the opera. It's not my thing. And my friend Dave brought me, I had this, you know, not a terribly profound thought somewhere in the middle of the opera. Wow, this is a lot like prog rock, you know. It was silly goofy thoughts in the middle of the opera, but then now going back and listening to this beginning of the punch you in the eye, when they get to the really like the big dramatic swelling composed part right before all the hey-hays and the whatnot, I listening to this recording, I think it was like, oh, this must be what it's like if you like go to the opera and you really know the score and you know when the dramatic stuff is coming and you know how, you know, the orchestra is supposed to fit together and how, you know, the strings are supposed to like hit at this exact moment, and like hearing punch you in the eye, like that, them hit that intro was just this swelling, dramatic, emotional moment for me. That's like, oh yeah, this is what the opera people are like. And yeah, that punch you is great. And that down, and it just, it carries right into that Down with Disease. And you to sort of get into that jam that you mentioned, it's, yeah, it's, you know, this tour is remembered for, you know, the cow funk and the grooves and, you know, just the dancing. But there's all this other stuff that's not that this Down with Disease is, that it's psychedelic art rock, something like that. Whatever it is, I love that space. You know, Rob Mitchum points this out in his, you know, fellow Osiris personality, Rob Mitchum points this out in his newsletters, that you know, the funk is sort of in 1997 kind of like it's sort of a way station. It's sort of like they pass through it sometimes and get out to this other side, this other space that they're exploring, also kind of for the first time in a lot of ways. And the Down with Disease is just beautiful and articulate, and it goes to all these places. And that pause, I had to go back, like I rewound that part that you mentioned, Tom, a couple of times. It's like, did they just stop? Because it's a stop. They do. There's a lot of that sort of stop starting thing.
You can tell they're counting, because the pickup is effortless and perfect. They're like amazing.
Right, so it's a stop-start thing, but it's not quite like the funky, like, hit the beat, stop-start.
No.
And it's almost like they finish like the musical thought, whatever is happening, and they kind of like come to like a little landing. And then when I rewound, one of the things that it's like, oh, there's like still a loop going. One of Trey's loops is still going.
Yeah.
And they all come back in on that. And it's the other thing that struck me about that moment is that often when Fish does like a stop-start thing, it's very much an energy thing. They'll go bam, and everyone, big explosion of cheers. You know, probably these days there's like a woo or two. But in that moment, it's kind of quiet. And it's, you know, it's not that people aren't cheering, but it's like a pause as opposed to like a hard beat kind of thing. And then it just sort of keeps flowing. And I really like it's a vocabulary piece that I really like. You know, it's, yeah, you don't hear a lot of it elsewhere. Or maybe you do, and I'm not remembering when that happened. But
you hear in opera. You hear it a lot.
I'll have to go back and keep a set list next time. but a great segue into Maze, like a full flowing one. That's not, you know, sometimes they would start the intro and kind of like ride the intro for a while before they hit it. But this is kind of like they're in a space for a while before they even get to the Fishman's part. Great transition.
So Jesse, this, we've sort of been talking about this, but I just want to get your take on the evolution. Cause I think it's funny. Cause I was in college at Ohio State at the time. So sort of down the road from you, but not actually. And you were a couple hours closer to Rochester. So it was a little too far from you, but I did go to State College and back, along with those others that you mentioned, but I feel like this is a pretty different sound than we got at the beginning of the tour, especially on the like reliance on more straightforward funk grooves. You know, there's some intense, dark, you know, jamming with some like really serene moments. And I'm just curious about how you see this. We're getting toward the end of the tour. Like, how do you see the evolution from the beginning to where we are now, sound wise?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I'm not sure I have a solid answer for that. Yeah, I mean, it's just I'm fascinated by that thing that, you know, Trey said when he spoke to you guys, and when I think he says this in the Fish book as well, that, you know, they were listening to themselves every night on that tour. And I think usually that means they were listening to the Denver show. I don't know. I don't know if that meant they like kept listening to like whatever the new things were. So in a way, it's almost like it's getting more. I almost said self-referential, but that's not exactly right. Because earlier Fish is definitely that. And yeah, I don't know. I haven't gone back and listened to everything on this tour recently. So I'm not sure I can totally answer that one in a convincing way.
Tom, what about you? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, no. I don't detect like an evolution. That's not like I've gone and listened to every single show, obviously. I was going to ask Jesse about this for set two, because there's a specific song I want to talk to him about it. But it seems like the cow funk is like, you know, turned on now and then now, and it's not as a novelty, but you know, they use it, it's in their bag of tricks now, but they're kind of just not retreating, but they're going to a place where they've, you know, they're so skillful and they're so in tune with each other and able to turn these incredible jams into amazing pieces. Like, I don't know. So I would just say they've evolved into like a more perfect Fish. I don't really want it to be cow funky. You know, Benji keeps saying this isn't a cow funk tour anymore. I might agree with him.
I mean, one of the things that I did keep coming back to listening to this is that in a way, the the funk almost like focuses all these other things that they had in their bag before this, like the noisy stuff and, you know, like, you know, fall 95 and summer 95, they would go off into these like long, really spacey Bowies, really spacey Tweezers and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like the funk is kind of this like element that is a way to kind of like glue those elements together. And they can kind of like go to that really noisy, like out space. And the fact that they can kind of like all fall back together into this pocket kind of like makes that feel more coherent than I think it did in earlier eras of Phish, when it can kind of feel like, oh, they're going from like a spaced out episode and now they're going to like space out even more for 20 minutes and then it coheres into something else. And I feel like when the funk sort of like marbles it in a way. I feel like you hear that in set two pretty clearly, you know, kind of going between this is sort of jumping ahead a little bit, but like it sort of blows out into noise after the big black furry creature from Mars and recoheres into Ghost and into that portion of it. And I feel like you can kind of hear the balance between those parts of Phish, you know, those elements going on in that set.
Can I just jump in one real quick? I just want to ask sort of a little bit off the script here, but Jesse, you've interviewed Trey a bunch and most recently, at least with us, you did about 10 hours of interviews for Alive Again about Trey's solo career. Did anything that he said about 97 versus 93, like did anything that he said in that interview that we did about 1117 surprise you, or was that kind of in line with what you have heard from him over the years in terms of how he views these different eras?
No, that's, you know, that's pretty much holds up with what, you know, what I expected the take to be. I thought, I guess the thing, there were a couple things that, you know, like just raised my eyebrows in ways here, you know, hearing his take on it after, you know, the Phish book kind of becomes this like canonical version of 1997 because it was done right then and everybody's been reading it and, you know, since then. And it's like, oh, you know, we started the no analysis rule, so we didn't fight. It's like, oh, that's not how you put it then. You know?
<Not at all. laughs>
But it's like, oh, okay, that makes, that's like, it, you know, it sort of clarifies the band dynamic a little bit in that way. But no, nothing, you know, the progression from, you know, manic 1992, 1993 Phish into sort of crazed, you know, space 1994, 95 Phish kind of adjacent to Surrender to the Air and that kind of like the really exploratory push, that whole arc makes, you know, such the traditional Phish arc, you know, that into Remain in Light, into the funk all makes perfect sense to me. Obviously, you know, when you go through it show by show, like Rob has been doing, it's not all a smooth transition. Things come in lumps and starts and then they sort of backtrack and it kind of, you know, sort of bursts through at this point. But it was so exciting as a fan just to be, you know, watching all this and experiencing all this in real time. Because it was like, you know, and it, you all, you know, it's not like any of this stuff was that terribly subtle. Like it was like oh yeah, this is a new, a new mode for them. This is, you know, they've pushed through and it didn't feel like a be all end all mode necessarily. For me, the arc then, not the end point of the arc, but the next big point in it is kind of like the sickity stuff and the sickitous stuff, which is happening at the same time as this fall tour.
Totally.
But for me, the Lemon Wheel fourth set, the Ring of Fire set is a really like, again, not an end point, but a just sort of one of the places all these things were pointing very much for me as a listener, like, you know, which isn't necessarily cow funk. It's kind of like pushing through into sort of the sparkling ambient pretty stuff that comes often after they were in that funk zone of just sort of open-ended improv. And for me, just as a, you know, as a, yeah, I was still a teenager at that point. Just the further they went into improvisation, you know, without reference to song points was just so thrilling to me. And that was, for me, that was like what all this stuff was pushing towards. Like the jams are getting longer, and not only are they getting longer, they're getting more, not structured, but there's more movement within them, it felt like, and more awareness of, you know, we're going to land in this space and then develop this space and make this a, you know, its own mood and episode for 10 or 15 minutes. That kind of stuff. And it was, that was so cool to, and I, you know, I guess I didn't have a whole lot to compare it to either for that matter. So it was really like a, a lesson in improvised music for me, just, you know, hearing the band evolve over this, you know, these couple of years together.
Beautiful, beautiful. And having your experience, you know, brought to a point and focusing, you know, we've been like trying to analyze, just like Rob, show by show, hearing you sort of bring back the lens and talk about Phish with all your experience, because you've analyzed many bands, The Dead, Yo La Tengo, hearing your expert take on it and kind of justifying some of our conclusions actually feels really good. Let me bring back, if you don't mind, the focus right before we take a break. One quick question about set one, just to bring us back to this show. Limb by Limb is such a beautiful, perfect jam and an example of what Phish had to offer back then, which obviously was outstanding. And then just let me pile on Maze, Disease, Limb by Limb, three contenders for me anyway, for best evers, certainly best in tour. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I guess my brain doesn't necessarily rank things in terms of best evers or best in tours, but all three of those are just spectacular versions. And that the Limb by Limb jumped out at me because it's sort of another big theme. The other biggest theme of 1997 for me is all this new material. And something that was always so exciting and so cool about seeing Phish is that this stuff is unrecorded or unofficially recorded. The stuff isn't on albums. You can only get it on these tapes. And if you're a Phish head, you're like keeping up with this repertoire. And like, it's like, oh, they played this. There are these three songs that they only played this one night in Dublin. How do we, you know, got to hear those three too, you know? And so hearing these things evolve, and Limb by Limb was one that really, I feel like they got a much better handle on that song over the course of the year, just because it's such a tricky song. And by the time they get to Rochester, it's so elegant and so graceful and is like just a, you know, almost like the full vision of that draft of the songs. I think it changed, I think, in spring 98 when they locked it down for Ghost. I think the arrangement changed a little bit. But that version, it's just because it definitely sounds, you know, tentative a little bit on the summer recordings. So the thing that what grabbed me about that was just how inside the song they were and how it was kind of like that song kind of creates a new vocabulary to jam on. And then this is just such a perfect articulation of that. It's such a great standalone Limb by Limb.
I'm right there with you. Before we get into set two, let's take a quick break.
Hey listeners, I want to tell you about one of our great partners, DistroKid. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100% of their royalties and earnings. If you're a musician and looking to get your music out there, DistroKid is the way to go. DistroKid is available for iOS and Android and is now available in Apple's App Store and the Google Play Store. More than a million artists rely on DistroKid to get their music onto Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all other major streaming services. And with DistroKid, you can upload new releases, see your financial progress, get notified when you've earned royalties, withdraw money from the app, view and share links, check your streaming stats, and a whole lot more. DistroKid has more features than any other music distributor. Check them out today. Go to distrokid.com, that's DistroKid with a capital K.com/VIP/undermine for a special offer only for our listeners. That's DistroKid, capital K, .com/VIP/undermine. Thanks, DistroKid.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
We are back with our guest, Jesse Jarno, and we're talking about December 11th, 1997. A fantastic show so far, anyway. Let's see if set two holds up. Jesse, let's allow you to plunge right in and answer that question.
Sure.
Phish almost burned down the stadium in Rochester with a smoking hot first set. I'm sure the audience was just stoked. Did they come out strong for set two?
They sure did, Tom. I mean, I guess, you know, my main physical memory of that show is just how dumpy an arena that place was in just the most fun way. Just like, all right, this is our place now. You know, like it didn't feel like, you know, there's like a gazillion security guards. You had to be like nice to the place. It's just this dumpy place. And I'm sorry if the people who run that place are, I don't even know if it's still open, if they're listening, but it was just, you know, this, you know, funky, everyone's like sort of shoved into the GA floor. It was freezing cold out.
A concrete music hole.
Yeah, absolutely that. Just like, you know, you read these stories about like the dead touring these like ugly ass hockey places in upstate New York. And this is like, that is like, so it kind of, it felt like that. And it was, you know, definitely super wintry out. So it was really, and nice to be packed into this like hot floor full of fish heads. You know, and yeah, they came out, they fucking tore the place down. So, you know, to talk slightly more about what I said during the last set about how, you know, keeping up with this unreleased fish music, you know, lots of bands, you have your favorite album by the band, you go to the show, you hope they play this stuff from your favorite album. With Fish, you know, you've got your favorite live tapes that you listen to over and over and over again. So one for me that was like hanging over this whole period was New Year's 95. That was a tape that the three set show from the Garden I listened to over and over and over again, which has the incredible Drowned on it. And so that's a song I was actually at Halloween 95. It's not at New Year's 95, but the New Year's 95 Drowned was like, ah, oh, I want to hear that again. So for like the, you know, almost 2 years at this point, I've had the New Year's 95 tapes. I want to hear them play Drowned and jam out. And they, I think it came back the week before Rochester. I think it came back in like Philly, maybe. But it was definitely the first time I had seen them play it since then. And it did not disappoint. That Drown just, you know, goes into the rip current and they just, you know, soar outwards. And it's one of those things that's funny now, because it's like, you know, that they're kind of, they have the goal of, you know, we're going to debut Rose, you know, Roses Are Free is debuted in this set. And you know, that's one of those things. It's like, I wish I knew the mechanics of like, well, what did they say before they went on stage? Okay, we're going to go out, we're going to like jam Drown for a little bit, then we're going to go into Roses Are Free. It's like, how do you like plan that out? Because it's, there's kind of a moment early in the jam where it like could have turned like directly into the beginning of Roses Are Free almost. And then they kind of like, they push it open kind of like that disease and kind of gets out into all these other spaces. Almost to the point where it's like when they finally do segue into Roses Are Free, it's almost like it feels like a left turn in a way that it wouldn't have 10 or 15 minutes earlier into the jam, but obviously wouldn't want them to have done that. that sequence of just the big energy jam and the way it flows into Roses was so great. And it's one of those things where I was not cool enough to know Roses Are Free. I wrote it down in my little note, in my notebook, Christmas tune. That's what I wrote it down. I think that the line, you know, the whole line about the yeah. pumpkin at the tree. Tinsel. Oh, it's a holiday song, you know.
Tinsel on the tree, yeah.
And my friends who I was with did know it. They were definitely, you know, they hit me to what it was. And I knew Push the Little Daisies from summer camp. So I knew who they were, but I didn't, you know, not well enough to know Roses Are Free. But it's a song that even if you don't, it's just such a great song that it's like, you don't have to be familiar with it. It's just instantly so good. It's, you know, it's a classic rock tune.
Of course, Ween had to pretend that they were offended that Fish covered it.
Right, that whole part of it. I mean,
too cool for school.
I mean, yeah. I'll admit I'm one of those people who became a Ween fan after, you know, I mean, I knew who they were and it's not like I, you know, didn't like them, but I didn't certainly didn't own any Ween albums before that. But so a slightly bigger picture thing that's kind of funny about Roses Are Free that none of us, you know, we didn't think about it until after we started hearing the tapes of the tour. So can't believe Dayton was only 4 days before Rochester. Yeah. Like, did I really go to class for 4 days? What did I do between those shows? Apparently I went to class. But so, you know, in Dayton, they play Boogie on Reggae Woman for the first time since the 80s, I think. Or did they play that in Europe? I can't remember.
It was the first one since hundreds but and hundreds of shows.
So that one had Boogie on Reggae Woman and Roses Are Free basically have the same melody. The guitar solo in Boogie on Reggae Woman, when you listen to the Dayton version, is basically he's basically playing Roses Are Free. And you hear that, you know, and I don't think I've ever seen anyone ask them about this. It's such a small, minute thing to ask about, but it's like, were you listening to Stevie Wonder on the bus? And then somebody's like, oh, this sounds like Roses Are Free. Were you listening to Ween on the bus? And someone was like, oh, this sounds like Stevie Wonder. Like, what was the whole, I feel like those two songs came out, you know, got busted out in such close pairing. Somebody in the band had to have made that connection. And you know, both of them become, you know, part of the repertoire in that way. But yeah. So, and then.
Totally.
Yep. Yeah. And then right into, you know, Big Black Furry Creature from Mars, which is, you know, I'd seen that before, but it was still, you know, it's always fun to hear. But then one of the things I love about this set is that noise thing that happens after Big Black Furry Creature before they land in Ghost. It's like, I don't know how long it is. It's 5, 7, 8, 9 minutes, something in there.
Incredible.
And it's really the uncertainty of it is kind of what jumped out at me in a nice way, that it's like they don't know what they're doing. They, you know, it's like they don't know that they don't know what's coming next. There's not a set list. It's like clearly they're off the cliff at that point. You know, they're hovering in space, and it's that uncertainty really grabbed me in a nice way. Like that there was not a game plan. There was not like, okay, we're going to do this, 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 and this. And it was like, they just reached this point and it's, yeah, they just hang there. And eventually count off into that, you know, Ghost. That the Ghost that struck me as like, Limb by Limb didn't feel like raw to me necessarily, but Ghost kind of did. That was a little bit of a surprise to me how early the Ghost felt, like in the spectrum of that tune. Just the way they're feeling it. It could be that there's less layers on it, like there's less guitar loops, there's less synths, there's less, maybe I'm just used to the current sound of that song and or the current way they sort of feel that groove. But
when I was listening back to this, I was thinking, like, I just kept saying to myself, like, take it easy, guys. Just take it easy during this Ghost jam. It's relentless. And it's, you know, like toward the end of this show and man, I mean, and then back into the, you know, Down with Disease into Johnny B. Goode. Just like incredible fit. I mean, absolutely relentless, you know?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Tom, I have to ask you because there was some footage from the show, which was famously used in Bittersweet Motel, but I know that you also were present for some time. I think you were maybe behind the camera when Todd Phillips was recording for some portion of time, but we haven't talked about it on this season at all. And there is some footage from this tour, but how do you look at that movie now? Like, you know, a couple decades removed from it.
It's kind of funny. I think Jesse already said the Fish book became like a snapshot of 97. And so did this, right? But I remember it so fondly because Todd and his camera and sound guys were backstage, and I was backstage a lot back then, and we were kind of inseparable. And I remember following them around in Madison Square Garden and with my pals, Tebow and Richard Gere at the Went. But it was in Barcelona where we really hung out. And I remember standing right behind them in the hall of the hotel when we woke up John Fishman for that morning interview. And you can tell he had a tough night. he might have still been having the tough night. And he says something like, what time was the interview? And Todd says, right now. And John says, that's not happening, and closes the door.
Yeah.
And I always liked the film, and it captured an important moment in Fish. And thanks for reminding me to rewatch. It's been a while.
It's I mean, seeing that film after, you know, when it came out, it was, and having, you know, experienced that whole period as a fan, it was a little, it was interesting to see it, because it's in the film, it's all out of sequence as far as, like, if you're a Fish head and you know how these things unfold. Like, I can't remember what the exact thing is. I think the stuff from The Great Went, when the whole offstage conversation, we played a bad set. Like, that whole thing comes at, I think that's in, like, near the end of the film, when in storytelling wise, oh, that's the beginning of the story, when they decide they're not going to do the no analysis rule, right? You know, or they are going to do no analysis. They're not going to analyze anymore. And it's like, that thing that you put at the end of the movie is actually what triggered the thing that started the next year. You know, I kind of wish there could be like a Fishhead recut of all that material. You know, I mean, I love the movie also because it captures that complete moment of insanity. That's really a turning point for Fish as well. And, you know, musically and otherwise, they kind of turn into this different band in 97, and it captures that moment so, so vividly. But I feel like it could have treated the music slightly differently. I guess that was, you know, that's my nerdy, that was my nerdy take on it when it came out in 2000, 2001. I can't remember when it came out, but.
Like, song remains the same. You can't really get, the music, all the jams get cut in that. Yeah. I just remember thinking, like, this could be the perfect Led Zeppelin movie. And then every single jam is cut.
But well, they didn't reshoot any of Bittersweet Motel on the soundstage and pretend it was Madison Square Garden, though.
Oh, all right. Yeah, good point.
There is some from Rochester in this, though. There's, I think Waste is in the movie. And I feel like there's a montage set to Punch You in the Eye from the beginning.
Yeah.
But I can't remember if the montage is the Rochester version or like the Great Went version.
Yeah.
Either way, when it came out, the Rochester show was I'm almost certain that was the one. Man, I wish they filmed that. They filmed that whole show and they put the Waste in and they skipped the, you know, all the crazy jamming stuff. You know, that was my hot Fish head take when it came out. Certainly not the part that was sympathetic to the filmmaker trying to tell a story.
Right. Well, this is amazing. And I will say that, Jesse, we have probably many more things to talk about, but we are required by law to to shut the conversation down before it goes too far.
Okay. Well, I do have a couple tiny more things to throw on the back end if we can.
Please.
One is just looking at the set list for set two. Struck by, except for the Down with Disease reprise, none of these things are on Fish albums at that point. You know, that sort of goes along with what I was saying about how fun it was to be kind of like, feel like you were in on the secret, you know? Yep. Like, you know, Drown and Johnny Be Good at the beginning and the end of the set. If you're a classic rock fan, you probably know those tunes, right? You know, but, you know, you certainly don't know Ghost at that point, unless you've been, like, keeping up with Fish. Same with, you know, Big Black, Furry Creature from Mars. You know, just the way everything fits together, you kind of have to know the language of it. And that was such an important part of it, in addition to it being just exceptionally good music, like that you were clued into the way that it fit together. And that felt, it just felt really special. And in at the moment, in that way, you know, that was like part of it. In addition to that was a sick show. It was like, that was a sick show by this like secret cool band that we know these songs and, you know, this is sort of our thing. It was a really, you know, it was like a 2-year window between Billy Breathes and Story of the Ghost. Breathes was like fall 96 and Ghost came out in fall 98. That 2-year window is when, you know, you and Trey, Tom, were so just relentlessly prolific.
Super busy.
It was just
super
like,
busy. Yep.
All these songs. And it's like, there's some that I still don't even really, you know, like there's some that's like, I remember they exist, but it's like, I don't think I could hum you Bye-Bye Foot, you know, that kind of, but it's just like, but it, not a bad thing. It's just like, I love the, you know, any band. I love the period when they're just like writing 30 or 40 songs and then, you know, sorting it out later, you know, just like, because it feels like they're kind of, and I say this in a general way, Fish included in this, but any band that does this, it feels like they're kind of like pushing beyond the narrative of what you expect out of a rock band, like you know album tour, you know that whole thing, and it's like really creating their own terms of existence.
So
the one other little tiny story I do absolutely feel compelled to add here, you can edit out if you need to. So one of my memories of the show is how crazily it was snowing afterwards. It was definitely, I don't know if you call it a blizzard, but it was an insane snowstorm. I was a freshman in college. It's pretty innocent freshman in college. I'd smoked grass a couple of times at that point, but I was not a pothead by any stretch. This is after the show. We're getting in the car to drive back to Binghamton where we're staying. And my friend and I decided, we're going to get a pot Rice Krispie treat, which is a new delicacy to me. I'd never, ever had a pot edible in my life before. And I had smoked weed a couple of times in my life, but, it was okay. But this was, so my friend and I split this rice, stale end of tour Rice Krispie treat. And that was really, that night after the show was kind of the first time I ever really got stoned, which was kind of a big moment in my own personal life that has nothing to do with the arc of the Fish tour. But I have just this distinct memory of driving back, my friend Evan, driving the car back to Rochester through the snowstorm. He had thankfully not eaten any of this hot Rice Krispie treat, or maybe it was a Fruity Pebbles Rice Krispie treat. And now that we know what dosages are, I wish I knew how much was actually in this.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish it was a 5-milligram pot thing. Was it 10, 20? You know, you never knew in those days. But I remember the snowstorm was like when you go to light speed in Star Wars, like watching through the front windshield of just the snow, like, you know, tracing lines. And then the real thing that I remember about this night is that the brand new TV show that year, that fall, was South Park, which I had seen the bootleg version of The Spirit of Christmas whenever that had gone around on VHS, but I hadn't seen the real TV show. And my friend had a tape of all 4 or 5 or 6 episodes, however many episodes of South Park existed at that point. My friend had them all on one tape, and we got back to his house, and, you know, I'm stoned for like the first time ever. And we just watched the first 4 episodes of South Park, probably twice, you know, each. And it was just the funniest fucking thing on the planet. You know, like, we had to stop the tape because we were crying, laughing, literally crying, laughing, you know, just a teenage moment, nothing to do with Fish, just discovering weed after the Fish Rochester show.
So I'm glad you added that.
Another reason why it's just burned in my memory forever. And then got up and did it again the next day. The going to see Fish, not the eating a pot Rice Krispie treat and watching South Park for however many hours. But
man, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was a fantastic fucking weekend. Oh my God.
That is amazing. And well, thank you for sharing that memory. I think that's going to do it for us today.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jesse, so much. And thank you, RJ, the my co-host, the king of Osiris, R. Jason B. And thank you all for listening, and to the Osiris team. And thanks, Cash or Trade, the world's only social network where fans buy, sell, and trade tickets at face value. Check out all the tickets at cashortrade.org.
I look forward to your play-by-play of the Jay Willis Pratt set tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's happening.
If you're keeping up at home, the next show tomorrow is the first of 2 shows the band closes the tour with in Albany, New York. And I was there, and I've got to go re-listen right now. We'll talk tomorrow. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Osiris.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind, and right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, All the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.